You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
From Cafe and the Vox Media Podcast Network, this is Stay Tuned in Brief. I'm Preet Bharara. Today we're going to discuss an often overlooked but growing kind of crime, wildlife trafficking. The demand for commodities like rhino horns and elephant ivory has led to sprawling trafficking rings that profit from the continued decimation of wildlife species. My guest this week, Andrea Crosta, is the executive director of Earth League International, an organization that has been called the CIA of wildlife trafficking. Earth League is an undercover investigations and intelligence agency that infiltrates and exposes the criminal networks at the center of the illegal wildlife trade. Andrea Crosta, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Could we start with your describing for listeners how this Earth League International came to be and what its mission is?
Yes. I was in Kenya in 2010 for my previous job. I was a security consultant for high-profile individuals with a lot of security problems, let's put it this way. And I was consulting the former prime minister of Somalia, who lived in Nairobi back then. And in 2010, we were right in the middle of the elephant poaching crisis, when we were losing 40, even 50,000 elephants every year for the ivory trafficking. I was right in the middle of it. I went out with the rangers several times, and I witnessed those terrible scenes that you can probably imagine: entire families of elephants destroyed, killed by, you know, with AK-47 by poachers. And I started to, I talked to the rangers, and I could almost see the question marks on the head of the rangers. You know, the whole world was asking them to solve this problem. And environmental crime, so wildlife crime is part of environmental crime, is the fourth largest criminal enterprise in the world, almost $260 billion per year. And I thought it was unfair to ask the rangers to solve it. It's like asking the local sheriff to solve narco trafficking. It's simply not right. And so I started to ask around, okay, who is using professional intelligence to fight back? So who is using professional intelligence in the same way it is used to fight other global threats like terrorism or organized crime or narco trafficking? And the answer was nobody. And I found it absurd. And that was the reason why big traffickers, big international traffickers behind this whole thing could work, operate undisturbed for decades. And so I decided to drop my job and to create one day the first CIA for the planet.
So I want to get into your techniques and methods in a moment. But before we do that, I just want to get a sense of the kinds of criminal activity or bad conduct that you target. We talked about elephant poaching a second ago. What are the other kinds of things that you see that are terrible that you're trying to combat?
Yeah, first of all, we don't operate at poaching level. So we don't go after the poachers. We go after exclusively the big international traffickers. Poachers or illegal fishermen, for example, are very often poor people living in the middle of nowhere and try to make a living. So you can imagine the temptation when in Africa, someone, a trafficker, offers you 3, 4, 5 years of salary to kill an animal, to kill an elephant, when you don't have anything, and maybe you have a family of 10 waiting for you at home. Of course you do it. So we go after only the big international traffickers who usually are part of sophisticated international, transnational trafficking network, trafficking syndicates. And they have their hands in pretty much everything. So they can traffic at the same time. These are people that can traffic ivory, rhino horn, pangolins, tiger parts, timber, all kind of, you know, shark fins. Some of them are even into illegal mining. So it's a variety of environmental crimes. Wildlife crime is part of it. And the interesting part is that these individuals are often into other serious crimes, and that is called environmental crime convergence. So while they are trafficking ivory or shark fin, they're also into money laundering, human smuggling, narco trafficking. So we approach this project from a very unique point of view and at the highest possible level.
And how much support do you get from the U.S. government and other governments around the world?
So we collaborate with the U.S. government and other governments around the world. In the United States, we routinely share our confidential reports with at least four or five different agencies. By the way, 2 weeks ago, there was a big operation. U.S. law enforcement arrested two of the most important wildlife traffickers ever arrested on U.S. soil. It happened near San Diego, and we were part of this operation as well. Sometimes we collaborate with governments, with other governments. We share information, we help the government of Bolivia, of Peru, of Mexico, Thailand, South Africa. We don't get support from them. So it's important to understand that
you're not funded by governments.
No, sometimes we can apply for grants like everyone else. Sometimes you apply for grants, sometimes, and then you might lose or win. They're usually very complicated to put together, and we are a small organization, so it's a big task for us to apply for a grant. Sometimes we do it together with partners, but we don't get money directly from them. So that's an important thing to understand for our donors, that the money we get from private individuals, foundations, and family offices, that money is used also to support the work of law enforcement agencies.
You mentioned a big operation in the last few weeks, and there were two targets that were taken in. What was their
correct
conduct? What are they alleged to have done?
So they've been trafficking seafood, shark fins, and totoaba for a long time. Totoaba is a fish endemic of Baja California, Mexico. And it's for the Chinese market, for the traditional Chinese medicine. They actually don't want the whole fish. They just want the fish bladder, the swim bladder. And it's very expensive. The fishermen in Baja California can get $3,000-$4,000 for one swim bladder. And the same swim bladder is then sold in China for $30,000-$50,000 a piece. We actually film in China one swim bladder at $100,000 a piece.
Why is the demand that high, and why is the price so high for something like that?
Well, it's complicated, but the demand is strong. And in this particular case, according to traditional Chinese medicine, the swim bladder of this particular fish is very helpful for your blood and also for pregnant women. So there's a very strong request, and it's completely legal. And the problem of this particular fish is that the bycatch of fishing totoaba is the vaquita. The vaquita is a small porpoise, also endemic of, relative to a dolphin, also endemic of Baja California, and it was completely destroyed because of fishing this. And now there are maybe less than 10 individuals left. It's the rarest mammal in the world, and completely wipe out because of this illegal fish. So we have been trying to work on this problem for the past 5-6 years, and the persons arrested were deeply involved in this trafficking.
Are there other animals or categories of animals that are most at risk because of human action?
Many, of course. You all know, of course, iconic species like elephants, even more rhinos. Only maybe 25,000 rhinos are left in Africa, most of them in South Africa. Tigers, think about tigers. 100 years ago, we had 100,000 tigers in the wild. And now we have around 4,000. So we almost lost all the tigers in the wild in 100 years. And in this particular case, for the tigers, they, again, traditional Chinese medicine, they look for mostly for the bones. So with the bones, they make wine, alcohol. And then they also want the fangs, you know, for superstitions. So that's an example. Another example is the pangolin. It's one of the most trafficked mammals, animals in the world. They want the meat and the scales of the pangolin. We have been working a lot on jaguars in South America. In that case as well, they want the fangs and the bones. And of course, then there is a apart from animal species, we had huge problem with deforestation. We also work on deforestation, the trafficking of timber, so illegal logging, and then the trafficking of timber. There are a lot of gigantic problems. In general, I describe this whole thing as the criminal exploitation of nature. That's what it is.
Yeah. So I want to talk about what the legal regime is and what laws exist. There's something called the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, which was propounded in 1973.
Correct.
Can you explain what that is? And is that helpful or not?
The site is called CITES. Yes. This convention has been established to regulate the trade of any product from nature, basically. So not only animals, timber, but also not only endangered species per se. So this convention, for example, regulates also all the products for the fashion industry. You know, for example, you know, the skins of reptiles, for example. It regulates the trade of flowers, everything from nature. And the problem is that this convention, which is basically the only international tool that we have to try to stop trafficking, is a trade convention. You know, the T of CITES stands for trade. Let's not forget that. It's a UN sort of convention, so it works like every other convention. You know, you're probably more familiar with the COP for climate change. So there are COP also for CITES, and it takes forever to take decisions. You have, you know, all the parties, all the nations gathering every now and then, and they make decision, voting. So it takes forever. And that's a great example is the vaquita, this little dolphin, little porpoise I mentioned before. A few years ago, I would say five, six, 7 years ago, we still had 500 more or less of these vaquitas in the Sea of Cortez. And this is when we started to really lobby CITES, hey, you have to do something. You have to pressure the government of Mexico to protect these animals. And you also have to do investigation on the international traffickers and this and that. And the only tool that CITES has is a ban. So they can ban other products. And so it's a significant commercial loss for the state. But, you know, we started 5-6 years ago, and only this year, actually these days, if you look at the news, these days they are finally discussing a ban on Mexico. And it's a bit too late because the vaquita from 500 individuals got down to less than 10. So it's on the brink of extinction, literally.
So if you had the power, what would you do to that convention to enhance it or replace it, both in the United States and around the world?
Yeah, well, again, it's a trade convention, so you cannot honestly ask for, you know, they have a small law enforcement, you know, unit, but you cannot ask a trade convention, a trader to all of a sudden start policing the world and you know, because also they don't have jurisdiction, they don't have the power, they don't have anything.
So what do we need?
So my solution, I mean, what we are doing is that, in my opinion, based on my experience, you know, I've been doing this for 12 years, but I've been in conservation for all my life. The only country at the moment able and willing to do something about it is the United States. And that's why we made this decision some years ago to put a lot of effort in supporting the work of the U.S. We have a long arm. We can reach people also in other countries. We have a set of acts, laws, like Lacey Act, for example, that we can apply to big traffickers. Our focus on environmental crime convergence, so the convergence of environmental crime with other serious crimes, is also very useful because it offers law enforcement agency different angles. They can use different laws. To make an example, in the case of a big ivory trafficker or timber trafficker, if the laws, local laws or international laws, are to week, we can provide information that this person or this network are involved, is involved also in money laundering and human smuggling. And you can go after these people for that. I call it the reverse Al Capone approach, right? If you remember, Al Capone was taken yes. down for tax evasion. And we are trying to do the opposite. We are trying to help law enforcement to go after these people for crimes that are more serious than environmental crime or wildlife crime. So this is how we are trying to change the game.
Before we go, I want to go back and talk about your methods and this label that you've been given, the CIA of wildlife trafficking. Can you explain, maybe by way of specific example, how the undercover, how an undercover operation might work, how you make sure that the people who are employed are safe? I know this is, you know, I've dealt in law enforcement for much of my life, and usually they were actually law enforcement agents who were going undercover, and it was quite dangerous. How do you address those issues?
Yes. So I call it the CIA for the planet because I got inspiration from the agency. And I also, when I decided to create this agency, because of my past, I was connected to agencies and people around the world. So I started recruiting former FBI and former CIA, my right hand, Mark Davis, 28 years with the FBI and the CIA, my left hand also in the agency. So we have that mindset and this, and we try to use within the limits. Of course, we are a nonprofit, a private entity within our limits. We try to use the same methodologies, especially when we talk about so-called human or human intelligence. So the core of our activities is the recruitment of sources and informants around the world or in the target countries. And these are people that can provide us, these are people that, you know, sort of gravitate or around these networks, that criminal networks that we investigate, and they provide information constantly. Plus, we have a team of undercover operatives, about dozens of them, and they of, you know, different nationalities and different languages, and they are really with a lot of experience. Like, you know, our chief investigator has more than 25 years of experience in doing this, and they're really good in basically, I wouldn't call it infiltration, but it's a very sophisticated social engineering work. Meaning, if you want to, if I can oversimplify even more, we are really good in becoming your friend. And then when we become your friend, when we are friends, you will tell us everything we need to know. And we need to know everything about you if you're a bad guy, not just about your illegal activities, but we're also interested in your legal activities because they very often overlap the two. We want to know how you move the money, if you are bribing somebody, so it's a long term intelligence operations. It's versus maybe short term investigations. We prefer to put a lot of time in order to really go as high as possible, and then we have a group of crime analysts, and their work is to process this incredible amount of data that our team bring back from the field, and we also do a lot of work and investigation on social media. For example, we use a few software and we can follow these people on social media. And so we find, for example, we're able to identify new links and how different entities and different targets are linked to each other. So it's a very sophisticated work. And at the very end, there is always a confidential intelligence brief, which is our final product that we share with law enforcement.
Final question. What are you most hopeful about in this work?
I've been putting a lot of time and effort and I basically sacrificed my life to this. I think it's happening. We are finally convincing law enforcement, governments, and even the media to shift the attention from the poacher to the traffickers, okay? If we were talking about narco-trafficking, it's important to go after the big narco-traffickers, not the person who is selling dope here around the corner. That's a waste of time. So it's finally happened after many years of, you know, we were in two big documentaries. So we do our part. We have a secret phase, but we also have a public phase. And it's finally happening. People are, and, you know, crucial key people and stakeholders are understanding finally that the focus should be big traffickers, transnational trafficking networks. And we see a lot of traction with law enforcement, especially in the US. So we finally, big traffickers are getting arrested. So maybe, hopefully, something is finally changing.
Andrea Crosta, thank you for being on the show and thank you for your important work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For more analysis of legal and political issues making the headlines, become a member of the Cafe Insider. Members get access to exclusive content, including the weekly podcast I co-host with former U.S. attorney Joyce Vance. Head to cafe.com/insider to sign up for a trial. That's cafe.com/insider. If you like what we do, rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Every positive review helps new listeners find the show. Send me your questions about news, politics, and justice. Tweet them to me at Preet Bharara with the hashtag AskPreet. Or you can call and leave me a message at 669-247-7338. That's 669-24-PREET. Or you can send an email to letters@cafe.com. Stay Tuned is presented by Cafe and the Vox Media Podcast Network. The executive producer is Tamara Sepper. The technical director is David Tatasciore. The senior producer is Adam Waller. The editorial producers are Sam Oser-Staten and Noah Azulai. The audio producer is Nat Wiener. And the Cafe team is Matthew Billy, David Kurlander, Jake Kaplan, Namita Shah, and Claudia Hernandez. Our music is by Andrew Dost. I'm your host, Preet Bharara. Stay tuned.